Episode 31. The best way I have found to rein in chaos is to provide it with an action. Create movement. Now you might be thinking, what? What is she saying? That's crazy. Oh, but it's so true. And I'll be sharing with you those tips and more on this edition of the Leading Chaos Podcast. Chaos happens. Here we choose to lead chaos rather than be led by chaos. We are sharing tips, resources, networks, and interviews that help you validate your ability to lead chaos successfully and remain steady on. Are you ready to lead chaos? Let's do it. This is the Leading Chaos Podcast, and I am your host, Rhea Wincolor. Welcome to the show. Hello and welcome to this episode. We are in episode 31 and part 14 of what I am calling the Leading Chaos Story. Now, this means that I am going through my book, which is titled Leading Chaos, An Essential Guide to Conflict Management, and it's a revised edition, and it came out in 2010. And you could get a copy of this book via Amazon in hard copy, that's a paper book, and also in ebook forms. And if you go to this podcast website, leadingchaospodcast.com, there'll be links there to get your own copy. And the book is on crisis intervention skills, and it's really doable for anyone who is both a professional and someone who is just working with their own family and friends. So you don't have to be a professional first responder to be a first responder. We all respond all the time, and conflict is a constant. And conflict, out of conflict comes chaos. And it really, I consider any conflict kind of chaotic. So thus, we lead chaos on this podcast instead of allowing it to lead us. Well, I'd want to just take a moment to say that, yes, I do use sound effects, so don't be surprised by that. And some listeners have said, you know, you might want to explain to people what's going on in the background. But truthfully, I consider you a leader of chaos, and I'm just poking a little bit of fun saying that, no, we are not sheep. I'm not going to explain the rest of the sound effects that I use on this particular show, but I do want to encourage you to have joy, find fun in this. Don't be overwhelmed by chaos. I certainly try to find the ease in it and make it simple. And one way to do that is to have little shoot-offs like the sound effects. So that's all that's about. The Bread and Puppet Circus takes place each year, and now it still takes place in the summers up in Glover, Vermont, and there's a puppet museum, and they are a theater group of puppet makers, and it's just an amazing scene. And of course, it's a little bit political. They are always working for the cause of bringing the unheard out to the masses. And they would put on this one weekend event every summer, often in the end of the summer in August. It first started as a little seed camp and then became like more and more people, and unfortunately became to a scene of a lot of excessiveness. And they finally had to close it down one summer after someone was actually killed. Now, that killing took place on a farmer's field because the local farmers would rent it out to the festival goers, or the circus goers, I should say. It used to be where I would go up with my parents and we'd be camping out, but across the way, somebody would have like a nitrous tank and be doing nitrous oxide or something like that. And it just wasn't cool. It wasn't a good scene. So my little group of friends and family, we kept on moving further afield, and we found this like little isolated spot on a farmer's field that was kind of close to the camp, so we didn't, or the main circus, so we didn't have to walk too far. And we would set up giant tarps, because I used to make tarps for camping trips, outdoor campers. And so I had about two giant 16 by 20 foot tarps. We set up a beautiful encampment for the weekend. It was just so much fun. I mean, you could think of like Parrot Heads with Jimmy Buffett or the Grateful Dead kind of groups all coming together. And it was a nice scene. This particular weekend was difficult because it was the last year for Bread and Puppet, because in the original field that I used to camp in, I guess, events occurred where somebody was actually killed. And on the field that we were at, we had another epic experience that was very telling for me, and I was able to use some of my crisis intervention skills effectively. And in hindsight, I've been able to refer back to this episode so many times because it really informed me on the tools that I were using, that I was using, and why they worked. So if you could imagine this group of friends and family, it was a Friday afternoon. I just drove up north from southern New England up north, and it was about a 3-hour drive. And I was high as a kite, just so happy. And I was setting up the tents with some friends, and we called ourselves the H Pigeons, I should say, which stood for homie pigeons, because there would be like a little trailhead and a place that you'd put up your poster, and I would just put down H Pigeon, and that was a signal for folks to go to our camp. And it kind of looked like it could have been Henry Pigeon, but I knew it stood for homing pigeons. And I thought that was kind of clever. Anyway, so we were all setting up, and it wasn't too busy yet, and I had kind of out of the corner of my eye noticed this group in the far field, and they were all hanging out, a group of like 20-somethings. And there was another tent across from us, not too far away, of a family, and the woman there had a small baby. And then another woman who I didn't know, she was, you know, setting up her tent kind of close to us. And Friday was all about setting up a tent because the actual circus took place on Saturday and Sunday. So we're hanging out, and the next thing we know, we hear this like blood-curdling scream, which was, "I'm gonna effing kill you." And truthfully, I want to tell you, the first thing I thought was, oh man, you got to be kidding me. Like, really? Out here? What? So I, you know, it's like 1,000 thoughts in a millionth of a second. And what I immediately noticed was that crowd of 20-something, there was something going on there, and there was yelling occurring. And in that same millionth of a second, I noticed that the woman with the little baby she looked horrified and grabbed her kid and kind of ran into her tent. And my friends all looked at me, knowing that, geez, Rhea, this is what you do. Do something. And not that I need to be a hero or anything, but I knew something had to happen because there were no rangers there. This was not a state park or anything. We weren't going to call the police. I mean, by the time you do that, even if we needed to do that, it was going to take quite a bit of time, just getting up to the point that we were. So I just went into my intuitive sense of things and started saying rather loudly, "No fighting. There are children here," which was a truth. And I kept on repeating that. No fighting, there are children here. And that woman who had set up her encampment not too far from us, she picked up on my cue and she started saying the same thing. No fighting, there are children here. And I started walking towards this group of 20-something-year-olds. And I was walking very calmly and just kind of kept on with this just a couple of words, no fighting, there are children here. And wouldn't you know it, as soon as I walked up to the group, they're kind of a little bit stunned. They parted like the sea, like the Red Sea parting, and they allowed me to enter. And as I entered, and I want to back up here a little bit, I'm sorry. What I wouldn't have entered or gone any closer if I'd noticed any kind of weapons. And that's a key thing. Remember, going back to the response protocol, you think, am I safe? I knew, one, that they were not targeting me, so that was a bonus. So I did feel safe. And that the second step was, if I'm safe, then my next question, is the scene safe? And the scene was not safe. So my goal then becomes to make the scene safe. So I did that by thinking, geez, you know, we have to separate conflicting parties. And that's why I approached this group. We go back to, I'm approaching them. They part like the Red Sea. And there's two guys. There's one guy who had screamed, I believe, like, you know, I'm going to effing kill you. And he was a pretty tall guy. He was taller than me. And I'm about 5'7" and a half. And I assumed that it was him because I didn't really know initially. But everybody's kind of looking at these two guys. And they parted for me to walk right up to these two guys. And I didn't say anything else. I just said to the guy who I was assuming was the I'm gonna effing kill you guy, and I said, walk with me, please. And they both kind of turned towards me. And I just said, you know, I moved my hands, which is kind of like a come along position where you're like waving the person towards you, not necessarily right towards me, but towards the opening. And wouldn't you know it, like magic, he turned and walked with me. And we were able to walk out of that group. And the whole time I'm thinking, wow, this is like amazing. But, you know, I stayed with it and he walked and we're walking away from the group. And now they're kind of like in that stun motion and they start screaming at him. And he kind of turned for a minute and I just said to him, water off a duck's back. I'm not sure why I said that, but it's a good phrase. It's like water over a dam, water off a duck's back, which kind of, you know, duck is pretty oily. The water just slides right off. And I just kept on signaling him and I said, wow, there's a lot going on here. And you know what happened next? The guy started crying. As we're walking away, he didn't turn back to the taunts. He walked with me. What happened? Wow. And I'm going to get to that, but I just want to finish the rest of the story. So we're walking away and I kind of see that up ahead, there's another group of kids his age. I say kids, you know, I'm a little bit older than 20-something these days, although I was much closer back then. And I figured that's his group. And I bring him up there and basically, you know, let him kind of emote a little bit. It was something around lost love and, you know, being jaded and all that kind of jazz, and told his buddies to take care of him. We said our goodbyes, and soon after, that initial group of the taunters and the want to fighters, that's a good label for them, they left. And our encampment just was serene for the rest of the weekend. And unbeknownst to us, that horrific act happened like across the street in another field. But I felt good about that moment, because we really chose. My friends stood back because they knew probably I was most likely the best one to go forward and say something because I did have those skills, and they held that scene. That woman who I didn't even know who she was, later on, I thanked her for kind of chiming in. That was a powerful thing because she didn't let me stand alone. And it was so, I think, so incongruent for the group of wannabe fighters, because what did they expect to hear? They expected somebody to say, stop fighting. Hey, knock it off. Don't you do that. I'm going to call the police. Or I guess conversely, people could say fight, 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 which is definitely an action, but it's not a positive action. So perhaps I should have really stated this episode is not just about creating action or giving conflict an action, but providing a positive action that you could take. And what was that action that I provided? It was simply to have that person walk with me. And I also added, please. Which is a nice thing to do. And it's almost like he didn't even realize what he was doing. I gave him an exit. And again, you might want to listen to last week's podcast episode. That's episode 30, part 13, which was titled Create an Exit. There's more on that. But I gave him an exit to step out of there. And I provided him an action that he could physically do. That's it in a nutshell. That's all you have to do. Provide conflict with an action, and it will take it. Think of conflict as an action. It's movement, it's yelling, it's anger, it's fear, it's arms flailing, it's feet kicking or door slamming. If you try to contain it and control it, oh, we know what history does. People rise up out of that. That you're just giving them something to buck up against. But if you give folks, when I say folks, a person in conflict, the parties in conflict, something to do with their frenetic, their out of control behavior, they will go towards it. because it's one way to kind of release it and you're not trying to stop them. That's the beauty of it. When you give conflict an action, you aren't trying to control and contain it. You are redirecting it and you're creating a positive action. So when that young man was walking away with me, I'm able to say, thank you for walking. And that's totally different from what people expect. Totally different. Because we expect to be clamped down on, to be forced to do something. And that's not serving anyone any value at all. As we're moving forward, we really want to create a world that we want to live in and that we want our children and grandchildren, our relations, to hold. But we have to hold it here first. And that first starting point is to really embody and be the person that you were set out to be. And that is a leader, whether you believe it or not. And it doesn't mean that you have to always be a leader, but you can create movable steps for others by giving conflict an action. Interestingly, you know, if you look at the course of history, who are the people that remember? It's not the bullies. I mean, there's so many dictators, like Big Whoop. Anybody could be a meanie. But the true folks who really stood up and changed the paradigm, they were the ones who met violence with nonviolence, who changed that whole approach differently. And the truth is, we could do it. We don't have to keep on approaching to conflict the same way through control and containment. You know, I'd like to invite anyone who is a member of LinkedIn. I am on LinkedIn, and I would encourage you to certainly send me a connect if you'd like. I'd love that. And my full name, if you don't know it already, is Alexandria. So it's Alexandria Windcaller. I shorten it for the podcast to Rhea because that's my nickname. And I have a LinkedIn group, which is called Crisis Intervention Training and Curriculum. And our sole goal to provide a resource and network for folks who want to really work towards reducing the use of restraint and seclusion. And that's physical restraint and seclusion, which is putting a person such as an autistic child or an adult in a secluded room, like a padded cell. I could talk more about that, but I want to encourage you just for now, for this short moment, to certainly send a shout out to me on LinkedIn. Let's connect. And if you'd like to join that group, I am the moderator for that group, and I would welcome anyone who would like to share their resources so that we could work towards making our world a better place. Getting back to creating an action. What we're doing there is providing a very tangible step for that person to do. So in the case of the campground scenario and that young man, I asked him, I offered him to walk with me, please. There's so many different actions you could say. You could say, look this way, which is different than look at me. That's a hard thing for a person to do when they're in crisis, to look at you or I. But to say, look this way, and also to move your hand, move your body at the same time. You know, if you wave your hand, I'm sitting here right now at my desk doing the podcast, and I have my hand in that wave towards me, so providing an opening. I could say, turn away. That's a physical movement. I mean, if you have a body, you could turn your body. I could also say, step back, or please take a step back. Which is probably a little bit too long, so I'll probably shorten it to step back. So these are all very solid actions for a person to take. That is giving a person who is in conflict, who is feeling chaotic, giving them a physical action they could do. Now, what do you say or do once they take that action? You just say, thank you for walking with me. People don't expect that. They expect to hear, geez, what were you thinking back there? Yeah, schmuck. I mean, what's going on already? You know, they don't expect somebody to say thank you. And what do you do? What you're doing there is you're creating an alliance. And that is part of making a scene safe. And creating an alliance is doing something for the good of all, not just for one person. So give conflict and action. And I'd like you to think about what are tangible actions that you would like to hear said to you when you're in conflict. You know, sometimes I get a little weepy. I have my good days and I have my not so good days. It happens to all of us. And if I'm on the cusp of crying, sometimes the best thing to hear, there's two options. If I have to buck up and move forward and there's no time, then I'm going to ask my loved one or my colleague to say, "You got to buck up, Rhea." Okay, so that's kind of shutting down my crying, but it's giving me something to move towards. That is an action. Buck up to me means, you know, take a deep breath in, exhale, and keep on moving forward because there's people in critical need and you got to act like a professional. But if I'm in the sanctity of my own home and I'm at that edge of tear, whether it's hearing some sad news or, you know, I have my boo-boo on my finger or whatever it is, then sometimes the action I like to hear is, let those tears come. That's providing me with action. Let me get out of it instead of holding that emotion. Because conflict is that action. It is an emote. So why do we try to contain it? If we contain it, you know, you put it in the little bottle, it's like, you know, that soda pop, you're shaking it and eventually it's going to pop. So it's so easy to do. You could begin these techniques straight away. Think next time you're involved in a conflict or you're witnessing someone else, instead of telling them to stop, give them action. I know you could do it. And you will. All righty. As we're winding up this week's podcast episode, there's a lot there. So I want to encourage you once again to go to the show notes and links. You could see what I was talking about with Bread and Puppet. And you could also get links to my books, the paperback or the ebook, and to leave a comment. What are you thinking about this podcast? I would love to hear from you and share that with other folks. It just takes one person to start that seed to get others to follow along. So be the leader that you are. And if I could ask you one more little favor, please go to iTunes, the Leading Chaos podcast site, and leave a review and rating. That will certainly help others know that this is a worthwhile show. I hope you feel that too. I like to call it, I just kind of changed the title on it, and I call it Crisis Intervention Skills Made Easy for You. This is Rhea Wincoller signing off for now. Be kind, be safe, and think action, action, action. Keep the world in motion. Don't be afraid to ride that pony out to the sky and catch the sunset. Ciao for now.